So actually, Dave is entirely correct. My degree here was my PhD. I did, however, come from... So I came from Monash. I came here and Jim Piper was actually my supervisor along with Mick. And one of the things he said to me is, it's great that you're here, we really welcome you. We're going to send you back to honours for about 6 months and you're going to do a crash course in everything everyone learnt in Opto. So good luck with that. So anyway, I audited all the classes, I did the exams, I sat with everybody else. They were very good because I wasn't actually being marked, so they were kind of very patient with me that I wasn't being held to the same exacting standard. But I enjoyed it, and I did actually get my lecturers to mark the exams anyway, and it was a very good experience. And then I kind of hit the ground into my PhD. I got a great opportunity to actually spend 6 months or 3 months, 3 to 6 months in Oxford. There was an exchange program that had been set up between the two universities, and that's where I met Dave and his wife and almost all of the other people I know in the physics world who've come over here. Dave Coutts was my supervisor in Oxford. If you're not picking it up, it's a fairly incestuous small circle of people. So, you know, Ben and I have worked together. Dave and I often have barbecues together. So it's actually one of the things that I do really value about Macquarie is it's a very close-knit university, and I've certainly... My entire life and subsequent career, which I'll go into very briefly, has actually come from my involvement at Macquarie. So I'm very thankful for it. I finished my PhD and I was doing doing some work with Jim Piper at the time. And I got a job at a company called Silverbrook. And what was funny about that is often when you're getting a job, you go into a recruitment agent and you apply for a job in their recruitment agency. And this guy sort of sent me on this interview and he was very... a little bit patronising and sort of telling me about, you know, how I should behave and whatnot. And he sent me in and he said, I really don't know why on earth they want to see you. It doesn't make much sense to me. Which didn't send me in with a huge amount of confidence into the interview. But anyway, in I went. And what it turns out is that, and I can talk about it now, but for years and years, and it's quite a joke, but for years and years, Silverbrook was a very, very private company. And in fact, I wasn't allowed to tell anybody anything about what I did. Everybody thought it was super duper exciting and that, you know, it was all, you know, lasers and weapons of mass destruction and goodness knows what. In fact, we were working on a new kind of printer. And the reason that they... yes, that's usually the response I get. But what was actually pretty cool about it is that my degree was in laser ablation. And none of that has to do with printing, certainly not thermal inkjet. But what it does have to do with is the laser ablation involves a really cool mechanism whereby you dump huge amounts of heat into a material and then suddenly it goes from being a solid to a liquid to a gas. It just explodes into phase in like a bajillionth of a second. Why that's interesting is it happens in laser ablation because lasers deliver really, really short, sharp energy into the material. But it also happens when in your thermal inkjet, so in any of your home inkjets, what happens is there's a heater and there's a pulse of energy that goes into the heater and it's sitting in ink, which is water, and the water gets to a really sharp temperature and it just explodes and that's what pushes the bubble out. And so the reason that they wanted to see me and the reason the recruiting guy didn't understand it is because the exact mechanism I'd happened to do my laser PhD in was the one that they were really interested in pursuing and understanding a bit more. And it just goes to show that there's quite a serendipitous event. I think what you'll find is it's quite... Everybody sort of said, you know, I didn't expect to. I wasn't thinking it would lead me in the direction of. But it's actually quite incredible what opportunities you get and all you have to do is take them. I became a senior scientist and I worked there for sort of five-ish years. And during that time, I was doing a bunch of characterization working in the lab. I was starting to... Towards the end of that time, I was starting to work more in terms of identifying failure modes, and it was more just, oh, this is some work that somebody needs to do, I'll just do it. And then people would come on board that were slightly more junior, and then you'd sort of start working with them and, you know, talking them through how to do something or why they would do it that way, guiding them. And often what happens is you demonstrate an ability in an area, and then it's recognised by somebody, and then they give you that responsibility. It doesn't always happen that you say, I want that job. I'm going to apply for it and get it. It's often that, particularly when it's an internal promotion, it's often that people say, well, you're pretty good at that. What do you think about taking hold of that team and guiding them? And then often in my experience, it's been me catching up with the training I should have done before I've actually been given the job. So I got made the Liability Failure Analysis and Metrology Manager. Which was my first managerial position. It was terrifying. It was a whole of sort of three people that I was coordinating, 3 to 5 people, but it was terrifying. And I did have the oh shit moment where you stand in front of the people that you're, you know, managing, and you're just like, I don't know if I belong here. But you get past it, and you kind of, you make good decisions, and you make good decisions based on everything you've ever learnt. So it's impossible for me to point out exactly what I've done and why I've done it, or how I've accomplish the skills to do it, because it's basically you are an amalgam of all the skills you have. After a fairly short time, we actually had a reorganisation in the team, and my boss said, listen, I want to give you a bigger team, but I don't have a technical team that's big enough, and I want you to take a sort of step sideways and go into a more operations-based role. And I had a team then of 13 people, so that gave me another exposure to managing both much more senior scientists at that stage, but also different types of scientists. So I was managing hardware engineers and software engineers, and I'd never done software engineering, so it was a real challenge learning how to actually come up to speed on managing somebody and indicating, guiding them in their career and in their technology without actually understanding it. So that's probably, that's one of the things I've learned. Often you don't need to know to be in the management area. You don't need to know exactly how somebody's going to do something to enable the management of their day-to-day activities. You need to rely on them being the expert, which they are, and then just help guide them to the greatest of their potential. And that lasted until March of this year, when there was a fairly large sea change in my career, when my boss said, I'm going to move into a business development team and I want you to take over. And it was for a team of 45 people, and I got given 12 hours to decide. And I figured, you know, why not? You only live once, let's jump. And so that's what I did. And I've been at times falling and at times soaring, but it's been certainly a ride. I guess I would say, I would sort of reiterate everything everybody said about how you use your skill sets and where you get them from. In that, at uni, I basically learned how to learn. And you learn a bunch of technical skills, which you'll be surprised how often there are echoes coming up in your career of things that you learnt about in uni. I sat a 6.5-hour open book quantum electrodynamic exam in my undergrad, and if you asked me to even start contemplating talking about QED, I would just have a complete mental blank. But I'd know how to look it up in a book, and I'd know how to figure it out from first principles, and that's really the skill set that you're learning. It's not about remembering everything, it's about figuring out how to learn it again if you happen to need it in a certain area of your career. Because everybody's career is entirely different. The one thing that you shouldn't do, and this is in general in life, this is as part of the management of your own career in general, I would say enthusiasm, engagement, and not getting defensive are pretty critical skills to have. So whenever you're confronted with something that's really stressing you out, it's really important that you never, ever get defensive or aggressive, because all it does is shut everybody else down, and it doesn't get you anywhere. So communication is actually pretty key, and I think particularly in the sciences, you have to be quite aware of that, because a lot of scientists are not as open communicators as they could be. Also, particularly when you guys are young, there is a general understanding about Generation Y, and you guys fit pretty clearly into Generation Y, that people want to progress really fast, that they want travel opportunities, and that's well recognised, that's fine. What I will say is that in my experience there are two types of people that fall into that category. There are the very motivated, really engaged, very active, productive, working closely as a team with everybody, and then there are people that expect to, and those people get benefits. So me as a manager looks at somebody, well actually my direct report to their managers now, but I look at somebody in the team and I say, I can see the contribution you're making. I recognise why you're asking for a pay rise or why you'd like to get given this travel opportunity. And 9 times out of 10, I'll try and get it for you. That's what managers do. They try and actually help you get what you want. But if you're sitting over here going, I deserve it because I've been here 3.5 days and I, you know, look, I lifted that coffee cup up here and I put it down there, there's absolute visibility that that kind of behaviour is just... it's posturing. It doesn't get you anywhere. So what I would say is the best way to advance your career, and people are ambitious, I think most people here are quite ambitious, the best way to do it is actually to really just make sure that your contribution is valuable, and it will be noticed. People will fight for you. Basically, I think the key part of going into an interview is having confidence that you're worth the job. If you go in and you don't know that you're worth it, and everybody's worth a shot at it, so just believe that you can get the job and you can do it well. Because as I said, in my career, there's been a number of times when someone's kind of offered you a job and you're like, oh God. And then you just kind of, you fake it till you make it. And then you make it and you're like, hang on, I can do this and it is okay and it will be fine. So I think that would be my recommendation, is just, if you're scared, it's probably a good opportunity to figure out if you can do it and try it.